And welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And my name is Sebastian.
And, well, first of all, happy birthday. I think date of recording is always worth mentioning.
Yeah, that's my birthday. He's not saying that to the audience. If it is also your birthday, happy birthday to you. But just making clear who's talking to here.
Absolutely. Well, we met up a little earlier in the day. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I think triggered a surprising amount of conversation.
Okay.
Is, did Ryan Murphy over-sexify the lead characters in the Menendez Brothers docudrama that's out right now?
Mm-hmm.
So for our listeners who are maybe not quite familiar, Netflix has dropped yet another documentary put together by Ryan Murphy. It follows two brothers who, I think it was like 89, 90, mm-hmm. That killed their parents. And it's triggered quite a lot of online discussion regarding mm-hmm. the portrayal of these two men. Don't get me wrong. Like, there's one scene where he's stepping out, one of them is stepping out of the shower, and he is a literal Adonis, like the belt and everything, like just beautiful man. So I mean, they look similar to the two brothers. Like, everything seems so, but the critique seems to really be landing on the portrayal, the sort of very overtly sexual portrayal of these two. I mean, have you seen much of the debate and discussion around?
I've seen the debate and discussion. I have not watched the show. Docudramas, I don't know. I'm a little bit iffy on docudramas. I have seen some in the past that I really, I mean, I love a good period piece. You know, any kind of movie about like Mozart or King, whomever, the whatever number, those kinds of reenactment movies, like they can be kind of fun. But a lot of the modern ones, when the person's still alive, I don't know what it is about it. It just doesn't really, I don't know, ring with me as being something that I'd want to watch. But I have seen a lot of the debate around it. And I've seen sort of similar debate coming from the movie critic scene. Because, as you know, I watch a lot of movies. And I also, in order to sort of gauge myself on what to watch next, because I don't just watch new movies. I watch a lot of old movies, too. I like to, you know, pay attention to what people are talking about, and I ignore half of it because you don't have to take all your opinions from the internet, for example. But you know, it's good inspiration. And there has been talks lately about sort of the pendulum swing going in the other way. So if you go back to the 70s to a lesser degree, 80s to a great degree, and 90s again to a lesser degree, because it's sort of fading out, there was excessive boobage in Hollywood movies. Large screen, independent cinema, small studio. It could be a heartwarming tale about the person who invented the bicycle, and they would still have multiple scenes in there with unnecessary bare female breasts. Unnecessary in the sense that it had nothing to do with the plot. Whether it's necessary to you depends on your inkling, you know? But relative to the plot, had nothing to do with anything. And there was also this general trend of, you know, all the women were like goddesses and all the men were dumpster fires, and all the men and all the women paired up, even though everyone watching the movie would be like, that woman would not pick that man.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been this sort of, not complete opposite, but there has been sort of a swing in the other direction now where it's like women don't even show ankle. They're all bundled up. Men take their shirt off because there's a mild breeze outside. And the men who are being cast, like the number of men in Hollywood who are complaining about the high standards in terms of bodybuilding and low fat content that they need in order to get a role, it's not quite gone to the opposite direction. I'm not going to even vaguely claim that the men are going through now what the women went through in the 80s, because that's just blind and foolish. But there is an equivalent or analogous switch in standards where men do basically need to be perfect, more or less. They are very sexualized, often for no reason, to the point where even I, as a gay man, I'm like, look, I'm just trying to enjoy this movie about an author in a small town who wants to write a poem about a tree, and yet every man in there is walking around with his shirt off and they're all oiled up for some reason. And it gets distracting.
We are a gay radio show. But it's an unexpected position for us to take. That the men are too sexy. They're too sexy. Stop it. Put a shirt on. Too sexy. Mm-hmm. We're not conservative in terms of showing ankle or not. You know, we're not prudish, I should say.
But there's a time and a place.
Exactly. You know? I think what
I don't want to go to the office and see my coworkers in booty shorts, even if they have booty short bodies. I am there to write a user manual, because in case the audience didn't know, I'm a technical writer in my day job. But like, I am there to write a user manual and maybe talk to some engineers about the latest updates to I don't know, the power supply unit of the hardware or something. You know, I'm not there to ogle somebody's pecs. Like, that's just there's a time and a place for everything.
I think that's part of the issue here. Now, Ryan Murphy has swatted away some of these critiques for the TV show. We're talking about Monsters, the Lyle and Eric Menendez story, available on Netflix. Ryan Murphy, a prolific and incredibly talented gay television writer, has done a number of things ranging from Glee to Jeffrey Dahmer. Jeffrey Dahmer was very steamy, not including the serial murdering, but you know, generally it was like, oh. But I'm wondering, is he sort of spoon feeding us some sugar here to get you know, hook us and draw us in? But I think a lot of folks are like, maybe he's gone too far. Maybe the men are too sexy on this one, because it's starting to distract from the story here. Now, the Menendez brothers, as part of their defense, and from what I can tell, he's spoken a few times on this, Ryan Murphy, the director, that he is painting a picture of these individuals from various perspectives. But there's been a critique that this isn't necessarily putting an appropriate weight on the trauma here. It's creating sort of a... But I wonder if the sexification of these men is just to pull the viewers...
Yeah.
And less appropriate for telling the story that they're trying to tell.
If you want to watch, you know, young, attractive people, and you watch something on the OC about some, you know, college students or something, this is a serious story about two young men who are victimized to the point where they themselves did horrible acts. I'm not going to justify any side of this situation.
Absolutely not.
But... portraying them as sexual and steamy. Sort of like, there have been multiple movies made about the Marquis de Sade, famously a sexual character. But every time they do it, they really try to, you know, balance the point of portraying him as being very open-minded for his time, but also at the same time, probably being too open-minded even for our time. That there's, you can portray somebody where sex is part of their story and not necessarily glorify it and not necessarily make it sexy. There's a time and a place, there's a right way and a wrong way. And I think some people are just sort of taking it too far. It is that sort of, you know, boobs in the background of an 80s movie kind of a situation that we're starting to look at with some of these portrayals, where it just, it doesn't feel relevant. It doesn't feel necessary. It feels distracting. And it also just feels like, you know, wrong time, wrong place. Like, this is a tragic story. And then this is popping up, you know, like.
I think what really occurs to me is that it's a relationship of two brothers. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I myself have a couple of brothers as well. And there is a unique dynamic. I think all of us, everyone listening who has a brother, who is male identified and has a brother, can understand that particular male friendship. But we were discussing earlier about the representation in film of male and male relationships that are not sexual.
Yes.
Oh, just the non-sexualized friendship. You know, if they're two brothers, it doesn't have to be incestuous. It can be just a pleasant working friendship, you know what I mean? It can be something more platonic. And the representation of platonic male friendships is not where we need them to be. And I think Ryan Murphy really missed an opportunity here to demonstrate that.
And there is sort of a backlash, I guess, a whiplash effect, a back something effect. You know what I'm trying to say.
A pushback.
Pushback? No.
Turns out I don't know what you were trying to
say. Yeah, you don't know what I'm trying to say. There is sort of a, let's call it fallout, where because any kind of male on male non-sexual intimacy is assumed to imply sexual intimacy, there is that sort of secondary effect of how that affects the culture's perception of male friendship, that you cannot have two men who are just friends and are everywhere together without people raising an eyebrow at that. And it can be harmful to just like heterosexual men who are trying to have, you know, close intimate friendships with their friends without people accusing them of something every 5 seconds, that there's nothing wrong with close male friendships, and it doesn't have to be sexualized all the time. And this is another issue that I've seen in some movies, a lot of fandoms as well. Because as you know, I'm currently making the foolish decision of watching all 15 seasons of Supernatural back to back. And throughout the show, they regularly make reference to the fact that the fandom, while the show was on, were regularly sexualizing the two main characters, who are brothers in the show. Mm-hmm. And okay, you got your headcanon, that's fine, but that's weird. You know, it's just two actual literal brothers, or at least the characters were, who just had a very specific kind of intimate friendship, and people made it weird. And you did not need to do that. That was an audience choice to make it weird. That was not the creative decision of the showrunners. And they would regularly call the audience out on that. Like, what are you doing? This is bizarre. There is that factor of sometimes fandoms make things weird. And I think it's gotten to the point where some show creators and some movie makers are making things weird, where they're putting sexualized relationships or sexualized undertones in places where it doesn't belong. And again, this is not me being a prude, because there are studies coming out that, you know, more and more people are uncomfortable seeing sex, intimate relationships, dating sometimes even in movies and television. And this is more pronounced with younger generations than older generations, but there is that sort of increased number of people. I'm not in that boat. If it's a movie about, like, I like romantic comedies. Those are great. You know, if it's a movie about a relationship, then of course you're going to have something in there. But then, I don't know, if it's a zombie survival movie and it's really just a bunch of people who are trying to make it to the finish line without being eaten alive, then yeah, absolutely. You know, the friendships you make along the way will literally save your life, but that's not really the point of the movie. Unless it's Zombieland, which is actually just a romantic comedy that happens to take place during a zombie apocalypse. But that was a weird movie.
It's a great movie, and the portrayal of the male friendship in that one is top shelf. You know, I think it's very unfortunate. But I fully suspect that this docudrama, Monsters, the Lyle and Eric Menendez story, will do extremely well and will have a really high viewership rate. And Ryan Murphy will usher in the next particular program that he produces. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder, unless we, as the audience, as the community that are consuming this content, mm-hmm. stop and consider, you know, does the relationship between these two brothers, does it add to it or detract from it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. I think as content consumers occasionally, it's on us collectively to go, yeah, it was sexy, but was that the right place? Was it like, was that the right tone to aim for on this? Well, we'll see. Like I said, it sparked a significant debate. And I thought it was interesting that even us, two gay men, were like, whoa, maybe it's too sexy. And just a non-sexual platonic brotherly friendship would have sufficed.
Well, you can even get into those arguments about the male gaze, where like the scene wasn't sexy, but the way the camera captured it made it sexy, because the camera was a substitute for the eyes of a leering individual. So it's like the camera forces you to leer because that's what the camera's doing, which I think there's a lot of cases where people accuse the camera of engaging in the male gaze, where I'm like, come on, calm down. And there's other times where I'm like, oh, 100%. And I think cases like this might be one of those situations where like the camera is leering and you as the audience are brought along that ride, even though you're like, I don't want to leer at this. So, I mean, yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
Absolutely. All right. We're going to cut to our first track of the day. This is Furthest Place, a remix featuring RB by Cuvaro. And we will be back just after this.
You can take the dog in the van and in the TV stand. All the things, all the things, all the things I've acquired, just to feel a little inspired. I set the living room on fire. I dress the walls and the sink in, just to feel something I wasn't feeling in your arms. Wasn't feeling at all. Just a deep dark pit, just a deep dark hole, just a deep dark pit, just a deep dark hole. On my side of the bed, on my side of the bed. The furthest place I've
Welcome back to Cancrio, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And earlier we were talking about local docudrama and the representation of non-sexual male relationships. But moving on, I want to talk about postmen, post-officials, post-employees, post-officers.
Postal delivery service members.
That's the one. That's the one we're going to stick it to it. Specifically the ones in St. John's, New Brunswick.
St. John's with an apostrophe S.
Yes, exactly. Okay. In St. John's, New Brunswick, actually throughout all of New Brunswick, a Campaign for Life coalition, who is federally registered as lobbyists, and they're registering provincially in New Brunswick as lobbyists as well, have issued three postcards. Mm-hmm. Now, these postcards have been sort of escalating in the tone of the messaging that they're putting out there. But fundamentally, these postcards are very concerned with trans youth specifically. Yeah. And if you're like, oh, wow, you know, postcards promoting trans youth, I don't think they're not promoting trans youth.
No, they wouldn't, no.
They are specifically not promoting trans youth. Just to quote one here, this is directly from the third postcard, the one that caused some of the most concern. Quote, no child is born in the wrong body. God doesn't make mistakes. Okay. So one of the post delivery service people who saw this has a trans son.
Okay.
So very much it was the case of like, wow, so clearly I am mistaken if God is mistaken and everybody else, my son is mistaken. Everyone here is mistaken except for Campaign for Coalition for Life or Life Coalition Camp, whatever the heck they call it. What are they called here? Coalition Camp Life Campaign? Life Coalition Campaign? Campaign Life Coalition. There we go. Got it in the
Campaign Life Coalition. I feel like it should be like Campaign for Life or Campaign of Life. Feels ungrammatical. But anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, fundamentally, there were about three or four post-delivery people.
Mm-hmm.
And they refused to deliver these postcards on the grounds that their interpretation of it is that it breached not just the policies, but sort of the dissemination of hate speech rules,
mm-hmm.
And therefore would not distribute these particular postcards across New Brunswick. Now, there is a bit of a back and forth. Some folks are saying, there's an allegation that folks were advised to use personal days off. If you personally don't want to deliver this particular mail, that mail goes out on Thursday. So don't come in on Thursday. Take a personal day to avoid having to handle hundreds of thousands of these postcards, each one saying that your child is a mistake. Yeah. I can see why you might want to skip work that day. I mean, it makes sense to me. But that being said, the Canada Post takes a very different position.
Yep.
They had their lawyers look at it, and they said that although, you know, we may disagree with mm-hmm. these particular postcards, they are not unmailable. They are not non-mailable matter.
Okay, yes.
which
is double negatives going on, but yes.
As opposed to mailable matter. So they are mailable matter as a result of not meeting the criteria to mm-hmm. be non-mailable. Mm-hmm. Now, the carriers in question, and in fact, I think even the union working with Canada Post, and there has been a push in terms of updating the legislation that guides Canada Post to incorporate hate speech into non-mailable matter.
Okay.
Because right now, you can mail hate speech within reason. You know, so me and you have talked before about the definition of the hate crimes definitions in total. There are very, very, very few actual crimes where if you did that, it is immediately a hate crime. I think advocating for a genocide is one mm-hmm. of them. And I think inciting murder for the purpose of, like, as a hate-motivated one is another one. And then writing extremely offensive things in a public eye is another one, distributing hate speech. Mm-hmm. But most of the times when we're talking about hate crimes in Canada, we're talking about a crime,
burglary, an assault, vandalism. Yeah,
where the reason why someone is committing this crime against person A is because person A is gay.
Yeah.
So maybe they are committing fraud, but they are only defrauding the gays because they don't think the gays should have money, or they're only doing carjacking. But they're only carjacking Muslims because they don't want Muslims to have cars.
Yep.
You know, that's there is a crime and there is a motivation.
Yep.
Therefore,
yes. that and crime. It is a motivation, and that has to be the motivation. It can't be that they're targeting this one demographic because they're easy targets because of, or they're perceived as being easy targets because of whatever historic access to whatever .. They don't speak the language, what have you. It's. The threshold for being declared a hate crime in Canada is pretty moderate, actually. It's pretty well balanced between not slapping it on everything, but also not making it impossible where it should apply.
Well, I think this is another occasion where we are talking about the balance of rights.
Yes.
This is, I think, a really interesting piece of Canadian jurisprudence, which is not a sentence you hear very often on the radio, but an interesting Canadian jurisprudence. But yeah, there is a whole area of law, specifically around human rights law, about weighing up the impact of restrictions of one right or one rights-holding group versus the rights of another group. Think about the rights to practice religion over the rights to healthcare, or the rights of mobility versus the rights of, you know, weighing that against yelling fire in a movie theater. Like, very often there are occasions where one group of people would very strongly believe one thing, and it interacts with another group of people who very strongly believe another thing. And, you know, how do you weigh up those two things to find an appropriate balance?
Yeah.
For example, you can have a school that teaches and is grounded in the Christian faith, for example, but you can't, like, that right goes all the way up to the line, and the balance is you can't fire people just because they're gay. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the rights to be able to work in any workplace as a gay person is weighed up against that employer's rights for who they hire within their Christian faith. Yeah. And that balancing act is important.
Yeah, that's just a labor rights issue. It goes up against another legal system. Yeah. I was actually, as you're telling me this story earlier, I was thinking this is kind of the, I had to look it up because I couldn't remember the name. This is the analogous but opposite side of the Kimberly Davis story, if you remember that one.
Yeah. That's she was a county clerk in, I forget where she was.
Kentucky?
And
I had to look it up. Yeah. It's Kim Davis in Kentucky. And she refused to give out marriage certificates to same-sex couples because she felt like that violated her religious interpretation. But the court system basically said, that's not up for you to decide. Mm-hmm. You're a clerk. You do your job. Which, unfortunately, I think it's 100% fair for the postal delivery people in New Brunswick to bring this flyer to the attention of people and say, how did this get past us? Why did you okay this? But once it gets into their hands, like, it's part of the delivery system, you know, they don't get to pick and choose what letters get to whose houses. It is different if it's junk mail, but I also don't feel if they have a personal vendetta against Canadian Tire that, you know, the monthly crappy tire flyer doesn't get into your inbox. I don't think that's up to them either. But I think it's 100% completely fair for them to bring that to someone's attention and say, I don't think this should be going through the system, and then justify it.
I mean, phrased like I said, you know, having a postal worker who has a trans son who has to spend 8 hours handling a postcard saying that, you know, just it's outrageous. And I understand.
And it's outrageous to Kim Davis that, you know, even though she goes to church every week, she has to give out these same-sex marriage certificates. People have different perspectives.
Canada Post says that they are fully neutral. They don't take a position on what mail they do and do not deliver.
That's a bit much.
Yeah, if Canada Post had to take a position on all of the mail that it delivers, I think that's, I'm like, that's maybe, that's a lot. That is a lot, that's too much. I don't need Canada Post doing a judgment call on, like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. But do I think that it is worth the politicians, once they're finished squabbling, which is very unlikely, but
it's what they do.
Is it worth the federal politicians, because the Canada Post is a federal Crown Corp, you know, we're talking about your members of parliament here, your MPs. Is it worth having a discussion on a national level, looking at what material can and cannot be put through the post? Mm-hmm. Because at the same time, there is a degree of public responsibility here. So, for example, we can't just go out and say anything we like on the radio because poor, unsuspecting radio listeners might get besieged by these opinions. It's why you don't swear blindly at